The Maine Calling Book Club reconvenes to discuss Cheryl Strayed's memoir, Wild. Wild was a runaway bestseller when it was published in 2012, and it's now been made into a major motion picture starring Reese Witherspoon. In the book, Cheryl Strayed recounts the story of her 1,100-mile hike on the Pacific Crest Trail through California and Oregon during a traumatic part of her life. I'm Jennifer Brooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll discuss Wild with writers Mary Poles and Josh Christie and Triple Crown thru-hiker Tom Jamrog. Have you read Wild? Seen the movie? Have you ever gone on a journey that has taxed you physically and mentally? The Maine Calling Book Club reconvenes to discuss one of the most talked about books of the past couple years, Wild by Cheryl Strayed. But first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Many of us, I'm sure, have thought about walking away from it all, at least for a little while. Few of us follow through, however, usually because life gets in the way. Cheryl Strayed is one of those who did do it and tells her story of hiking the Pacific Crest Trail in her best-selling memoir and now major motion picture, Wild. For this month's Maine Calling Book Club, we'll be discussing Wild and the challenges of long-distance hiking, as well as the craft of writing a memoir. Joining me in the studio, Mary Poles. She's a feature writer for the Portland Press Herald, Maine Today, as well as a not entirely reformed movie and book critic. She is also the author of Accidentally on Purpose. Tom Jamrog is a Triple Crown thru-hiker. Josh Christie is store manager and book buyer for Sherman's Books and Stationery in Portland. He is the author of Maine Beer and co-author of the Maine Outdoor Adventure Guide. He's also co-host of the Book Rageous podcast. Of course, we want to hear from you. Have you read Wild or seen the movie? If so, what did you think? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. You can send a tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome back, Mary and Josh, and welcome to Maine Calling, Tom. It's just a treat to have you here. And before we even talk about the book, I have to ask you, what does it mean exactly to be a Triple Crown thru-hiker? It sounds impressive without even being sure of what it is.
There are three major national scenic trails, the Appalachian Trail, the Continental Divide Trail, and the Pacific Crest Trail in the United States. And a person who is a Triple Crown hiker has hiked all three of those trails. And between 2007 and 2013, I thru-hiked them all. I started in Mexico to Canada with the two Western trails, and I hiked the whole AT, came back to Maine.
Wow. What'd you think of the book?
I read the book 2.5 times.
Wow.
I first read it all the way through. Then I read it just as a hiking book, and I started on page 50 the second time. And then in preparation for this, I read it another third time. And I think that she's done an incredible job of piecing together some things that I didn't think could get pulled off in one book. But obviously, she's a very, very creative writer. She's really gifted. I think it's really captured a lot of people's imagination and desire to get into the woods, which is good.
And did she capture life on the trail well, do you think?
Yes, I think that she did capture a lot of life on the trail well. A lot of what she experienced is what many of us experience when we are in a situation where it's really difficult to keep going and the challenges of the physical terrain are so tough.
Okay. Josh Christie, what'd you think?
I loved it. I read it. I have my beat up, the radio audience can't see this, but I have my beat up galley of the book. I read it actually before it was published. And, you know, it just struck me as a great book. A memoir. Strayed was an author I'd never heard of before, but she's so honest in this book more than anything else. And she has a very strong authorial voice. You're really there on the trail with her or in her life before she was on the trail. So it struck me, and also struck me kind of in contrast to the other memoir that we were selling really well at that time at the store, Eat, Pray, Love, which is another woman that's kind of discovering herself, but in a very different way than Strayed does in this book.
Yeah, that is interesting to tie together those two memoirs, sort of a genre developing in the early 21st century. Mary, what about you?
It's funny that you bring up Eat, Pray, Love, because I just read something where Cheryl Strayed said that she knew that some readers had considered her whiny in much the same way that people considered Liz Gilbert sort of whiny in Eat, Pray, Love. And I did have that problem with Eat, Pray, Love, and I didn't have it with Wild at all. But I was resistant to it for a long time. I think I waited until it was out in paperback and everybody I knew had read it. And I think I kind of stayed away from it because it has this buzz of, you know, she's trying to get over the death of her mother, a very, very early death of her mother, who was 45. And she's also trying to get past not a heroin addiction necessarily, but a pretty serious dabbling and a bad string of love affairs. I wasn't really interested in reading a drug memoir, a rehab memoir at all. And it so isn't that. And I did love it when I read it. I was very moved. She's a very, very good writer.
It's interesting you say that, Mary, because I had a similar feeling in which, in many ways, I couldn't relate to Cheryl Strayed at all. I had a much happier upbringing and, more secure upbringing, and my dad was there and all that. I haven't ever been as promiscuous as she admits to being or tried heroin.
Not quite.
but I still was really compelled by her story. And I think that's really interesting how she could reach out to someone who's just entirely different than she is and still pull all of us in to really care about her and her journey.
I think part of the reason I cared so much about her was that although I love to hike and I've spent some time in the Sierra, I can't imagine doing this by myself as a woman. I mean, I really can't. I would love to think I was cool enough to do that, but I never could. And so on every page, I was thinking, you're kind of crazy, but I really admire you, for just getting out there and doing it.
And Josh, you mentioned that it was so honest. I mean, boy, you and Mary have, and I should say Tom too, because you have a blog. Both of you write personally, but fessing up about some of the things she fesses up to, that's pretty brave too.
Yeah, I have to imagine that. And since this was published, she came out as one of the authors of Dear Sugar, which is an online advice column. And since then, a book called Tiny Beautiful Things has been published that collects her writing from there. And I do wonder if her sitting in that position as she was writing Wild, her offering advice to people and really having to bare her soul and being able to do so anonymously, if that helped her in the process of writing Wild, because you can kind of see the same DNA in both of the books.
Hmm. Tom, Cheryl Strayed went on her big hike as a young person in her early 20s. Your first big hike was at a different place in your life. Despite that, are there parallels between her story and your story? You were in your late 50s, right, the first time you did one of these big through hikes?
Yes, I was 57. I think that everybody walks the same trail. The trail doesn't change for your age. I mean, and I think that the one incredible thing that I enjoy about walking the trails is that it doesn't discriminate against people that have money, people that have experience. It really doesn't matter what you do for a job. Once you start walking, you still have to negotiate, distances. You have to kind of put up long days. And everybody gets leveled out, which is completely the same. And everything drops away. If she were hiking today, she sort of had a trail name, I think. Most people have alternate personalities that they take. You don't usually use your own name. You usually get a nickname. Typically, it's given to you by other hikers.
What was yours?
Uncle Tom.
Okay.
For all three hikes, right?
Yeah. I got Uncle Tom early on the AT, and I liked it. You can have a lot more disparaging names. I was glad I had Uncle Tom.
I mean, you alone?
I started alone, and then within the first day or two, I ran into some fellas from Maine that we hit it off with together, and I ended up summiting Katahdin at the end with a number of the same individuals that I started the hike with, which is really unusual. And one of those individuals and I ended up doing the next two trails together, and he's quite young, so he's in his, I don't know how old he is, I never really asked him. I bet he's around 30, maybe a little bit older. And it doesn't matter what your age is. There are people that can't do it in their 20s. There are people that can in their 70s now. And it's just a wonderful experience to live that trail life and to be in that subculture. And I really enjoy that. And I miss it a lot back in what I call the shower world.
Back in the shower world. Yeah. I have to ask you, though, have you lost toenails?
I've never lost toenails, but I did get a few blisters early on in the AT hike. And then I ended up with taking some advice from someone. And they said, get some shoes. They're at least a size two larger than your normal size. And because your feet swell, and if people end up with shoes that fit in the beginning, very quickly they end up getting blisters. But I'll tell you one thing. I saw the movie, and the opening scene is her tearing off her toenails. I've seen a lot of these movies from people that do DVDs about being on the trails. That's always a scene in the movie, is these gross scenes of people with incredibly battered and bleeding and blistered feet.
I haven't seen the movie yet, but just thinking about it is enough for me.
Well, I spoiled it for you for a little bit.
That's okay. You know, it's so interesting because one of the oldest themes in literature is the journey or the quest, you know, the odyssey. What is it about a human being taking a physical journey to better understand oneself? Mary, you're the big thinker in the room.
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, as Tom's saying, so there's the shower world, and then there's the world she's in, where she's maybe dreaming of the shower world. But she also talks about how she knows she's going to miss it, and that there's nothing like it. I mean, she's walking herself into the process of thinking about everything, every aspect of her life that she needs to think about. And she talks about how that some things are buried, right? That it takes her a while to get to them. And, you know, for self-discovery and healing, she's alone with her thoughts. I mean, we all have the same conversation in our head over and over again, but she's having it in a beautiful place where there's no interruption so she can really get to the heart of herself. And I think she does. I mean, you know, who knows if she came off that trail really as wise as she is by the time she writes Wild. A number of years pass, right?
Right. A good part of her life.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm sure she didn't have such beautiful perspective on the day that she came off as she ultimately does. And you learn that you take the journey, and then having that journey within you as a memory is really, I think, the most powerful thing of it all, less so than the actual hell, right? Than the torn toenails and the blisters and, you know.
And Tom and Josh, I didn't mean to disparage you guys at all. I just know how Mary thinks these big thoughts all the time.
I don't know if I was doing it there,
though. You're a psychologist, right, Tom? I mean, is this something you've thought about, is the physical journey and the quest to find oneself?
Oh, yeah. I'm obsessed with the journey. I'm obsessed with local journeys. I'm obsessed with even a walk that I take outside of my house every day. I think it's fantastic. You change every day. The scenery changes every day. One of the things that I found that didn't ring true for me in the book was what the experience is of actually walking the trail. So in the book, she's alternating a lot of her experiences on the trail with then it appears like musings about her life that she might mull over. My experience is that once you get on the trail, particularly if you're trying to thru-hike it and hike an average of 20 miles a day or so, after about 3 or 4 days, you don't remember anything about your previous life. It's gone. There are no thoughts at all. I remembered one time I was really stressed out before I started a hike, and I wanted to talk to people about it once I started hiking. And finally, after 3 or 4 days, somebody asked me, well, how you doing? I said, oh, man, terrible. And they said, what's going on? I said, let me tell you, I couldn't think of what it was that bothered me. It's that compelling to be out for that long, for weeks and months at a time, and you are literally totally absorbed with not falling, with not hurting yourself, with the weather, with pain, with food. So you don't tend to process a lot of your old life. There's no time. There's no energy. There's no room. So I thought that she might have perhaps melted two experiences together to make it seem as if that's how she was processing it all. And I haven't talked to her. But my experience is it's a different universe when you're hiking for months at a time.
Interesting. Josh, Dani Shapiro in her review in the New York Times said, Wild is a profound meditation on the nature of grief and survival. Agreed?
Yeah, I think so. That is very obviously, there's so much she's going through in her life as she decides to go on the trail. but it really seems driven more than anything else by not having dealt with the loss of her mother, you know, because that was at the start of her story, kind of, and then her years of promiscuity and her failed marriage and drug addiction and all of that kind of followed that, and then the reset for her really was going on the trail. So as the driving force, it makes a lot of sense that that's what Shapiro wrote.
So the part that was hardest for me to read is her horse story, when she and her brother had to put down her mom's beloved horse.
It's pretty brutal in the movie, too, let me tell you.
Is it? Oh, gosh. Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe I won't go see it.
Well, it's really well done. I mean, it's funny because, you know, you hear this all the time about it, particularly in the recession, that horses, it's people are, you know, not taking care of them, having to get rid of them, maybe sometimes shooting them is the best option. It's really tragic. And so in their situation, you can't really blame her, right? There's nothing else they can do. And there's a scene in the movie where Laura Dern, who plays her mother and is just excellent, even though she's like 2 years older than Reese Witherspoon in real life, I think. But anyway, she tells her, you know, just do the kind thing. And so, you know, as you watch it happen, you'll be thinking that it is the kind thing, but it's also terrible, you know.
Right, right. Believe it or not, we have to take a break. When we come back, we'll have your comments and questions. Stay with us. This is the Maine Calling Book Club.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Highland Green, a 55-plus active adult community on a 635-acre campus with Nature Preserve, HighlandGreenLifestyle.com, and Casella, committed to safe, efficient disposal of non-recyclable waste for all 16 Maine counties. Casella, giving resources new life.
What right have you to be dismal? What reason have you to be morose?
The answers to this holiday conundrum can be found in A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. It's back in an imaginative performance by Jonathan Winters.
Bah, humbug!
Reconsider the heart of the Christmas season. I'm Susan Stamberg. Join us for a special presentation of A Christmas Carol from NPR.
And you can hear that this evening at 7 o'clock or tomorrow at 12 noon. Both MPBN Radio and Television are offering a diverse selection of holiday specials this holiday season for your listening and viewing enjoyment. They're listed in your December Experience Program Guide or online in the listings at mpbn.net. Enjoy and happy holidays to you from all of us at MPBN.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the Maine Calling Book Club discusses Cheryl Strayed's memoir, Wild. With me in the studio, Josh Christie. He's co-host of the Book Rageous podcast, author of Maine Beer, and co-author of the Maine Outdoor Adventure Guide. Mary Poles is a not entirely reformed movie and book critic and author of Accidentally on Purpose. Tom Jamrog is a triple crown through hiker and blogger. We invite you to join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We're going to start with Maria in Brunswick. Hi, Maria. Go ahead.
Hi. I think I might be the only person in the country who had the opposite reaction to this book. I'm a writer and a hiker, and I've raised my children to respect the woods. And I also know so many search and rescue people who put their lives on the line rescuing unprepared hikers and campers when they get out there and they don't understand being in the wilderness. I felt sort of sorry for Cheryl Strayed, but I found her to be a person who made really bad decisions, not just by hiking unprepared on the trail, but throughout her life. That was how I responded to the book, so I wonder how your commentators feel about that.
Maria, it's a really interesting point, and I don't think you're alone. Tom, how do you feel about unprepared hikers?
Well, I did a review of the book on Goodreads, and there are a lot of reviews of the book on Goodreads. I'd really recommend people go there and see it. But I actually described her as a walking bad judgment machine. And I think that you're absolutely right. And because of her bad judgment, she really suffered more than she should have suffered. And maybe that's what's so compelling about the book. But yeah, as a hiker, there are people that have been far more accomplished who are females that aren't deserving the credit that they probably should have. And they're sitting there wondering, how come this person that did part of the trail is like a rich bestseller author and no one wants to hear about my smart judgment accomplishment and how I prepared and got myself in shape and went. So yeah, I share your opinion about that.
Yeah, I think and I hope that no one is looking at this as a book that is advice for hiking other than what not to do.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, it may inspire some people to go to the trail, but I hope that Strait has been, you know, with her honesty here, she said, you know, this is everything that I did wrong and this is why I shouldn't have done this. And I hope that's the part that people are picking up.
Maria, thanks for calling in. Headed out to up to Mount Desert Island. And David, hi, David, go ahead.
Hi. I was kind of really pleased to hear the previous comment because that's pretty much what I had in mind. I thought I'm going to come across as a real curmudgeon here, listening to the, you know, the various people talk. And I feel exactly the same way about rescuers who put their lives on the line and then somebody's hurt because somebody's too selfish to take the time out to prepare. The other thought I had about this just before I get off the line is I like to hear more about the description of what's going on in the hike and the countryside around and so on. And I just get tired of people staring at their navel and hearing all of their problems in life. So I think it's a great, you know, it's a great author. Maybe it's a good book, but it's not the book for me about hiking and the wilderness. Thanks very much.
Mm-hmm. Mary.
Well, I think the fact that she's hiking in the wilderness, it's not incidental. I don't mean to say that, but it's really about her personal journey. And if you're not interested in that, fine. So don't pick up a memoir that's very clearly about a personal journey. And I will say that, is it a selfish choice? Well, sure, if you are having to be helicoptered out of there by people who are putting their own lives at risk to get you, that could have happened with her. You know, I would say that her worst issue in terms of preparation was buying bad shoes or shoes that were too small and or fit her just right, and then she needed bigger ones, and her enormous backpack where she tried very hard to be prepared. It's not like she went out there with, I mean, she was a strong young woman. Why was it so selfish? I don't think it was so selfish. I mean, she wanted to take a hike. She didn't prepare well. She's the one who suffered. If you suffer reading it, give me a break. I'm sorry. I'm feeling testy.
Yeah, well, for better or worse, you know, the person that was most and really the person that was only hurt in this book was Cheryl Strait. You know,
right.
She wasn't impacting other people that much. She kind of reaped what she sowed, which is again, what she's saying in this book. That's why the book exists. If the hike went perfectly, it might be a good travel book or a good nature memoir, but it wouldn't be this story about grief and about her experience.
Go read Bill Bryson if you want a description of a hike, right? Well, Tom, would you say?
He kind of had to bail, though, didn't he?
Oh, well, yeah, but I mean, but
well, so did she.
Tom, is anyone, though, what strikes me is anybody really truly prepared for a hike of this nature the first time?
I think these days, what we have available to us is what Cheryl Strait didn't have available, which is huge numbers of people hiking these trails and returning and blogging about them and, you know, being on Facebook about it.
The internet, yeah.
She did it in 1995. She also did it in 2 years after Ray Jardine came out with Beyond Backpacking, which revolutionized backpacking at that point. And his ideas were so new that people didn't realize you don't need to have those big boots anymore, that you could hike the trail in you know, soft kind of sneaker-type footwear, and that reducing your load actually allowed you to have more pleasure, not less. One of the things that hikers do say now is we prepare for our fears when we put our backpack together. Often people with great big backpacks, even though they're well prepared, they're prepared for every possible emergency, so the weight keeps going up. And we find that as people hike, they generally shed a lot of that stuff, even things that they thought they needed.
Like her saw.
Yeah, like a saw, like a chair, like a roll of condoms. That's the other thing that was a riot about it, is everybody on the trail is so tired and so smelly. There's not a lot of that goes on. You know, we're just trying to survive.
It's funny you say that. My kids and I hiked Gulf Haggis a couple summers ago. We ran into some Appalachian Mountain through hikers, and they were swimming, and we kind of swam with them for a little bit. And my kids later said, boy, they were so nice. but they really smell. So, there are a couple. You brought up a great metaphor in the shedding of your fears and then shedding of the stuff. And I thought there were a couple metaphors. Generally, monster, her backpack, and the heavy load, the burden she was carrying with her. But it was also something that was essential to her survival. That we all carry these loads with us, these burdens, but we have to have them. But also Crater Lake. You know, I loved what she wrote about Crater Lake, that it was formed by a volcano. And she said, what a mountain and a wasteland and an empty bowl turned into after healing began. In other words, how something that's immeasurably beautiful is created out of emptiness. That was maybe my favorite metaphor in the whole book. You guys have any thoughts there?
A Crater Lake is just a fantastic thing to come upon, walking right and looking over the rim. Go ahead. I'm just thinking right now.
Well, if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Send an email, talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I was intrigued by the books that she took with her on her hike. Have you guys thought about what you would take with you? Josh, did you think if I were going to go 1,100 miles, this is the book in my backpack?
Well, it's funny. One of the ones I would probably bring is Tiny Beautiful Things, which is Cheryl Strayed's other book. I don't think I'd bring Wild. But I love the fact that there's a list in the back of Wild of the books burned on the PCT. And it's a lot of great classics. It's obvious that she was an aspiring writer and a lover of literature and all of that. I might have gone more contemporary than her, but I'm not sure what I would have brought.
I love the way she bought the Michener for her mother, because she thought her mother thought he was so great, but she had been really disdainful of him. So I would not have brought that. I would bring Middlemarch and Daniel Deronda, and maybe I would. Would I be stupid enough to bring Moby Dick so that I could maybe force myself? I don't know.
A couple extra pounds in your bag.
Yeah.
Tom, do you hike with books?
I like to hike with my favorite book, which is The Snow Leopard by Peter Matheson. And I am so excited that it just came out as an ebook. And I will now hike with the cheapest Kindle, which weighs 6 ounces, and all of my guidebooks, and The Snow Leopard will be on there. And if I hike again, that's what I'll do. But again, there's not a lot of time to read. Most times I thought I was going to be reading. And you're just trying to finish up at the end of the day, get a meal into you, and then just maybe sit by a campfire if it's permissible and there's dry wood. And then you're in bed when it's dark.
If you have a Kindle, is there a solar charger of some type
there
you could take
be.
With you?
The Kindle that I have keeps a charge for a month.
Okay.
Reading 30 minutes a day.
There you go.
Yep.
Wow. We have Bob in Brighton Plantation. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Good. I thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail in 1996, and I just want to tell a quick little story about how you get into this other world that's detached from this one a little bit. I met a good friend on the trail. We hiked quite a bit together, and we ended up hiking all through Maine together and summited together. He was from Illinois. His trail name was Illinois. My trail name was Quixote. And when we finished the trail, my wife picked us up, brought us back to our little house in Brighton Plantation. We both took showers, went into rooms, got dressed in blue jeans and T-shirts, and walked out and looked at each other. And we just hardly recognized each other. And then we had to admit our true names, and we introduced ourselves to each other. And it just really kind of brought home that idea of being out on the trail and really being in a different universe.
And have you planned any big hikes since then?
I have not. When I finished the AT, all 2,160.4 miles of it, I was done walking for a long time. And I got back to gardening, and that was good. And now, once a year, I go up to the AT on Bald Mountain and bring some goodies and try to catch some through hikers and spend a little time up there. But I haven't done any more long hikes at all.
Okay, Bob, thanks so much for calling in. Tom, what about you? Are you done? Are you eyeing some of the big journeys in other parts of the world?
I have an opportunity to hike in Nepal. I have a friend that's there, my friend Joe, and he's working as a nurse. He's there a lot. I'm not really sure I want to do any long hikes right now. It's been really hard on my family. My wife has been... I want to thank Marcia very much, but it's really hard for her to, and for people, to, for you to be away that long. And I was away for about a year and a half through the last 6 years. So I promised her to stick home for a while, and I'm having a great time with Local Adventures in Maine. We have more than enough majesty here for me to be happy.
And I think you'd probably say you agree, right, Josh?
Absolutely, yeah. There's plenty of good hiking here in Maine that you can get home to your family at the end of the day or at the end of the weekend.
Okay, great. Going to Cape Elizabeth and Sarah. Hi, Sarah.
Hello, Jen. I had a comment, and because I know Tom a little bit from being in school with him quite a long time ago, I know how sincere he is, and so my comment about him saying that he didn't really think about anything after about a few days on the trail, I'm going to play the gender card and say that I think so often women who go for hikes are really looking to talk with other people, and they remember everything about their other life back there. And part of the allure for them when they're hiking, me included, is to be able to talk that all out at a really, really low speed rather than being rushed. And so the value to me really is when I'm hiking is that it's incredibly slow. It's like slow food. And so, Tom, with regards to not remembering anything about your prior life, have you ever heard women say something different?
I bet his wife is sitting at home right now
saying, yeah. That'd be great to ask her. No, I really haven't heard that. I mean, it's pretty compelling out there. People hike for different reasons, though, and there are no rules. There are people that sometimes complain about people hiking too fast, that they miss things. There's people that like to hike slow. I have no problems with any of that at all. And if you're a person that wants to hike and ponder, that's a whole different reason for hiking than what I like to do, which is really rev up and get up to about 3 miles an hour. And I find out if I can hike between 2.5 and 3 miles an hour with a backpack, you're not thinking about anything else. It's a beautiful experience. You're just experiencing rocks. You're just looking. You're back to, you know, what things were like 10,000 years ago. And I love that experience. And that might be a male thing, might be a female thing. I'd love to hear from some other long-distance female hikers who might be able to chime in on that.
Well, I'm just going to chime in and say that when the person who gets an email from me right after I've walked the dog every day is the person who gets the most thoughtful email of the day from me, because that's what I'm doing. I'm thinking, even if it's just an hour out with him, and I'm preparing myself for the next thing. So I'm glad Sarah called, because, I mean, you certainly do spend a lot of time hiking thinking about dinner. Absolutely.
But. Right. Well, and, you know, I don't know if this is really relevant to hiking for days on end or just a walk, but I read recently, and boy, I wish I could remember where I read this, that hiking to Westerners is like sitting to Easterners, that this is where we sort of meditate, that people in the U.S. and in Europe go for a walk. So I wish I could remember where I read that. But thank you, Sarah, so much for calling in. We're going to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Highland Green, a 55-plus active adult community on a 635-acre campus with nature preserve, highlandgreenlifestyle.com. Goodwill of Northern New England, with a goal of moving 10,000 households out of poverty in 10 years, goodwillnne.org/incubation. And Baxter Brewing Company in Lewiston, committed to 100% wind-powered beer production, baxterbrewing.com.
That pumpkin spice latte you're sipping right now, it had a whole lot of innovation behind it. And we aren't talking about the recipe.
It's not brand new, but it was put together in a new way, integrating old and new and Italy and America. And by the way, he got it mostly wrong at the beginning.
I'm Kara Miller. That's this week on Innovation Hub.
And you can hear that in about 20 minutes at 1 o'clock.
I love Christmas, and I love writing music for the Christmas season. Something about voices singing together, that for me is the magic of Christmas. Hi, I'm Eric Whitaker. Join me for Light and Gold from APM.
Join us for that tomorrow evening at 10 o'clock.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the Maine Calling Book Club discusses Wild by Cheryl Strayed. With me in the studio, Tom Jamrog. He is a triple crown through hiker. Mary Poles is a feature writer for the Portland Press Herald, Maine Today. And Josh Christie is store manager and book buyer for Sherman's Books and Stationery in Portland. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Headed to Carol, who's calling us from a safe place on the road. Hi, Carol.
Hello. Thank you for taking the call. I just wanted to say that I'm an ex-marathon runner. I've done 7 marathons, won a women's division, did Boston twice. And I didn't enjoy the marathons nearly as much as I enjoyed the training for the marathon. And it really, your past caller talking about from a woman's point of view of walking the dog, I now walk on the track at UMF in the morning at the rec center there in Farmington. And it's still the piece of my day that lets me get ready to approach the rest of my life. I'm trying to learn to become a swimmer and get to be a good enough swimmer that I can get into that same meditative state. But right now, it's kind of like the guy said, all I'm thinking about is that I'm swimming, that I'm breathing, am I kicking properly? So it's kind of these two things that I'm doing. The walking reminds me of my old marathon running, and I'd love to hike some more now that I have two knees installed. I have two artificial knees, and they're working quite nicely, and I'm almost to the point of hiking. But the swimming has been meditative in an entirely different way. I have to think about it all the time to learn it, to really do that lapse in the pool thing.
Carol, let me ask you this. When you walk, do you like to walk alone?
I prefer it, but I will chat with people from time to time. But
okay.
Most of the time, in all of my training for marathons, I loved my training alone on the road. I trained mostly in Gloucester, Massachusetts, and I loved it, absolutely loved it. And I'm on my way to Gloucester now. It's still my hometown, even though I now live in Maine.
Well, Carol, thanks so much for calling in. Drive safely. Thanks for sharing. We're going to head to Gardner and Amanda. Hi, Amanda. Go ahead.
Yes, I just had something to kind of add in to the entire conversation you guys are having about kind of males versus females and what they think about while they're hiking. And my boyfriend just got done hiking the Appalachian Trail last summer, and I know he spent a lot of time thinking while on the trail. I mean, I'm sure he thought a lot about, well, I know he saw a lot about food and sleeping and everything. And where he was going to be that night. But I know that, you know, he went on a journey to work through some things, and he really spent a lot of time thinking on the trail. So I just thought it would be neat to throw in that, you know, someone from the opposite gender spent a lot of time on the trail thinking.
Well, Amanda, thanks a lot. And Tom, you mentioned that everybody hikes for a different reason. Everybody has their own reason. But it sounds like there is one common thread that everybody thinks a lot about food.
Yeah.
Cheryl Strayed thought a lot about food. And when you're on the trail, are you thinking a lot about food?
Yeah, a lot about food. It's one of the few things that I think you can really look forward to, you know, at different portions of the day, stopping for a snack, stopping for lunch. It's just such a primal thing to eat. And we're hungry all the time. We're burning, you know, maybe 4,000 calories a day, you know, on these through hikes, carrying, you know, a pack and getting our miles down. It's so wonderful to be able to eat as much of anything as you want when you reach a town and still end up losing 20, 30 pounds at the end of your hike.
Oh, my goodness.
There's nothing like it.
Going to Liza, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Liza.
Hello. I'm calling because I have a nephew who has developed apps for smartphones that can help, like, the day hiker and the through hiker. He's done the whole Appalachian Trail as well as the Pacific Crest Trail. I don't know if he's going to actually ever do the Continental Trail, but anyway, he's developed a whole bunch of apps right here in Portland that are really great for preparing for the hike and also having them with you while you're on the hike.
Well, Liza, feel free to go to the MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page and post some information about that.
I wonder if Cheryl Strayed would have liked to have any apps. I have the feeling she would not have. I think she liked winging it the way she did. I feel like we're sort of not talking about wild. Did anyone out there read this book?
Thank you, Liza, for calling in. Going to John in Hamden. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I have a question. I think probably most appropriately directed to Tom. And I'm going to hijack the subject matter a little bit. I spent this summer riding my bicycle across the country. And what I discovered was how difficult it was to readjust to quote-unquote regular life. I expect it's a phenomenon that people who hike the trail also have. Hadn't read anywhere about it and was kind of surprised to experience it. And I guess more than anything else, I'd be curious to hear Tom's take on that.
Yeah, I'll just respond to it quickly here because I see that the show is coming to an end. It's really a neglected portion of the experience. I don't like books that end with the last day on the trail because it doesn't end. The experience of being on the trail will continue for people for months, perhaps years. I had a great deal of difficulty adjusting after my Appalachian Trail hike. I got into a depression like I've never experienced in my life that was unabated until about the middle of January into February. I was too anxious to want to go back to work. It was overwhelming to me to just have to multitask again, get back to work, and then just walk in our society that demanded so much of us. The next two times, I did much better with it. But one of the writers that I thought did a really good job about that, if you're looking for a book to kind of process that, is Bill Irwin in his Blind Courage book. He talks about that a little bit. There are people that have, you know, had such trouble adjusting after the trail that they've committed suicide.
Oh.
It's serious business. And when people ask me now, should I hike the trail? I don't always tell them, go out there and do it. I tell them, you better be prepared to change your life if you come off the trail, because some people, you know, may fit right in, but you might be one of those individuals that is going to really struggle, and I don't want to be responsible for that.
Go ahead, Tasha.
Was a big part of Wild, too. I mean, that was the reset button for Cheryl Strayed. I think one of the reasons she did the trail was knowing that it would have this profound effect on her life when she was done with it. Or at least she can communicate that now that the book is done and she has the benefit of being able to look back on it. But I think that, you know, she's saying throughout the book that the reason she's doing this is to affect a sea change in her life, basically.
Well, and we'll post that Bill Irwin's Blind Courage on our MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page in case you're not listening to the show with a pen or pencil in hand. Tom, who would you recommend? I mean, what would you say to someone? What are the questions someone should ask his or herself before thinking about taking on an epic hike?
Wow, that's a difficult question. I know there are people that just say you really need to think this out and know why you're there. I'm not into that. I mean, if you have an opportunity to go through that door, you know, on the flip side, there's a reason why that door is opening for you at that point in your life. And I would say, you know, be willing to embrace the wilderness. I mean, it usually works out for people. I mean, it's probably the rare person that really, really can't come back. But for the people that I've talked to that have been through the experience, they treasure it. So I would tell people to smarten up. Don't listen to what everyone in, you know, like the sporting goods stores tell you. There's a lot of great information on websites like whiteblaze.net. That's a great place to go to have forums where you can ask your questions. You can have people review what's in your pack. I mean, it's fantastic, the knowledge that's out there on the technical level. And that's really, and I would tell people, try not to take much weight on your back, because it's really a burden to carry a lot of weight. And I think you're right, Mary. There is a parallel between her taking a monster pack and having monstrous experiences of loss and grief and sadness in her life that probably are a big feature of that book. Mm-hmm. There's no mistake as to why those two are going together.
Going to Deb in Lincolnville. Hi, Deb. Go ahead.
Hi. I hiked the Appalachian Trail in 2004 with my fiancé at the time, and I certainly commend Cheryl for doing it all by herself.
But it was really interesting. For me, I was like some of the earlier callers. I wasn't as impressed with kind of her journey. I wasn't impressed with where she started out with. And at the end, I agree that she didn't have a lot to say about her recovery. Like, I know it's kind of implied, but I wanted to hear more about, really, did you really recover from all the horrible things that have happened in your life? But for me, as a female on the trail, I was shocked at how much she thought about sex. I mean, it was the furthest thing from my mind for hiking for 6 months with a bunch of stinky people. And I didn't feel like the men were really, I mean, there were some men that were inappropriate, but that was something that just blew my mind for her experience on the trail.
Yeah, the inappropriate guys, though, were the ones that were the hunters or the people that were not the through hikers, right?
Well, she was, in my opinion, more attuned to her own sexual needs or interests. I mean, I felt like she turned most of the men she met into sexual objects, and I certainly was not in that place. And I was about her age when I hiked.
But you weren't. You were with your fiance. You weren't struggling to overcome a habit of like serious promiscuity, right? I mean, you weren't like sleeping with people that you met in alleys, which she was, and you know, guys who were on heroin. So, you know, you could see that that would be more prevalent in her mind than yours, perhaps. You know.
Certainly. Yeah.
Deb, thanks so much for taking the time to call in. We're going to go to Bob in Norwalk. Hi, Bob.
Hi, wonderful show. Sorry I came in late on the scene, but I might have one or two helpful comments. I successfully thru-hiked the trail in 2004. It was wonderful, except I couldn't have my wife come with me because of the rigors of the trail. I was 62 at the time. 10 years later, this summer, the two of us hiked the Camino de Santiago, which is a religious pilgrimage route across northern Spain, 500 miles, and it was a wonderful experience, which we both managed very well. People of all physical conditions managed it. One guy had 3 joint replacements. Another guy was in a recumbent bike with a paralyzed right arm. You carry a very light pack, maybe 14 pounds, because you don't have a tent, you don't have cooked gear. You stay in a dormitory every town offers every night, shower up, clean your clothes. And all along the trail, there are wonderful little cafes that you can get, Cafe Con Leche and Hoagies, and really wonderful local cuisine.
Bob, let's go.
Bob,
we're going.
Thanks so much for that recommendation. And I've heard others who have done the same thing. I know Sheriff Randy Liberty up in Kennebec County did that with his wife and thought it was a fantastic experience. Thank you so much for sharing, Bob. I'm going to say goodbye to Bob and ask you all for some final thoughts as we wrap up this show today. Josh, how are you different after reading this book? Are you preparing for a long hike?
Ooh, that's a big question with a few minutes left. I don't know. I think that, and I feel like I reacted in a lot of the same ways that Mary did. I thought it was just an incredible book about Strayed's experience. It made me a fan of her writing from now on. I went back and read her her first novel, Torch, and we'll go on and read her work from now on. And I think, you know, writing from her first person perspective, writing as a woman, it's a great contrast to something like Into the Wild, which is kind of the book in the past about someone going and losing themselves.
Book, yeah.
Yeah, and this different perspective and the reaction to her having written this are very interesting to follow.
Mary?
Well, for me, you know, I think the lesson, just actually talking about it here, makes me think about when you are out in nature and you're on a long hike, you know, and I've never done anything like Tom has, but I've done the 3-day thing. And you feel like that you are at this place of the ultimate realness in your life. Like, this is the thing that actually matters. And this is how you are meant to be. And obviously, you know, then real life intervenes. But, you know, if we can carry with us, you know, carry forward just that memory of like, that's the actual real thing. To me, there's great solace in that, even if you do have to go back to your day job.
And I'll end with you, Tom Jamrog.
I think that what I take away from the book is that nature can heal us. Extended periods of being out in nature can transform us. And I think that she did probably portray more of the suffering. And as one of the callers said, there wasn't enough description of just the majesty that's out there. But one of the things she did really well at was describing what it feels like to get into your tent at night. And I think that that passage, that page, and I can't find it right now, is fantastic, because it's just, we can be surrounded by some safety and go to sleep and then be comfortable and then hopefully get enough energy together so we can wake up and do another one of those days.
And face another day. Well, thank you all so much for being here. Mary Poles is a feature writer for the Portland Press Herald Maine Today. She's also a not entirely reformed movie and book critic, as well as author of Accidentally on Purpose. Tom Jamrog is a triple crown through hiker and blogger. We'll post a link to his blog. Josh Christie is store manager and book buyer for Sherman's Books and Stationery in Portland. He is co-host of the Book Rages podcast, author of Maine Beer, and co-author of the Maine Outdoor Adventure Guide. Next month, the Maine Calling Book Club, we're going to do something a little different, not one book, but a collection. We'll be talking about some of the works of E.B. White. So that's January 29th. We hope you'll join us. John Keimel ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith. I'm Jennifer Rooks. From all of us at Maine Calling and MPBN, happy holidays. You've been listening to Maine Calling on MPBN.